Welcome back, Billiken fans. It's Zach Miller and Peter Hale. This is the Midtown Madness Podcast. Before we get going, if you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button. This season of the Midtown Madness Podcast, and specifically this episode, is brought to you by Two Men in a Garden Salsa. Pete, I love salsa at all times, but with the World Cup, as long as Mexico's not playing the United States, I'll have a little salsa while I'm watching the game. And Two Men in the Garden hits the spot. I wasn't able to get any more of the cantina style, so I had to go out and get the regular and just kind of, hack it myself. But it's still amazing, still so good. And they're not just salsa company. They have pickles, which Peter is a fan of. But go find them online at twomeninagarden.com. But you can pick up all their products at any local grocery stores. They're also on social media at Two Men Salsa on Instagram and Twitter. Pete, I mentioned the World Cup. And just about the biggest positive thing to come out of St. Louis University in the last week has to be Tim Ream, center back, United States men's national team, Mike Sorber, men's national team general manager, I believe. They go ahead, and people were disappointed with that tie against Wales, but they go toe-to-toe with England. And I got to tell you, our boy Timmy Ream was nails.
For the second game in a row. I mean, yes. Toe-to-toe with Wales, and it wasn't him. It was his center back counterpart, Walker Zimmerman, who made the mistake of putting Gareth Bale on the penalty spot to tie that one late. Tim Ream has been rock solid in this tournament, both games, not just against England, against Wales. He has been poised by every metric, every advanced metric. He's been outstanding. He's played every bit as well as he has at the position for Fulham this year in the Premier League. He has them solidly as a mid-table team. He's 35 years old, and his sort of veteran experience, his presence, I think is really being felt on this team. One of the three youngest teams in the World Cup finals. And I think having him back there has just been, I mean, not only making the roster as kind of an uncertain late addition, but being that starter, I don't think he's been subbed out at all yet. He's been an absolute rock back there, and he's been a blast to watch just because he's so solid, and can't wait to see him take care of business against Iran in a couple days here.
Yeah, I'll be watching Argo for the next few days to get excited for that one. No, I think, did you see the quote from Tim Ream when he was talking to Berhalter? Berhalter's like, if you were 24 and not 34, you would have been on this team. And he goes, well, good thing I'm 35 then.
That's right.
Oh, my God. No, I think you're right.
Wasn't that Pep who told him that? Pep Guardiola from Man City?
Oh, I don't know. I thought it was Greg.
I thought it was Man City, the top club in the world, and the top manager in the world comes over to him saying, you'd be on Man City and not Fulham if you were a decade younger, but he had his age wrong. I could be wrong, though. I mean, I think it works for either coach.
Absolutely. It
makes sense either way.
But I think Berhalter was kind of in – and I'm not a guy, I don't have enough time to follow the U.S. men's national team and all the drama that comes with it. but like, I think that's kind of why you want him, right? Like, he's your center back. Get the wily veterans, the grizzled, he's got the facial hair. He's got he looks the part. He's he's played the part perfectly. Yeah. So I think it would have been a mistake to leave him off it because of his age when you are relying on so many younger players. And by the way, I can't tell if this team is blissfully ignorant or just has massive cojones going forward.
I think it's a little bit of both. And I think he's a guy who's there for maybe a little bit of perspective. You know, he was a player earlier in his career who was seen as having the ability to be this kind of player, but was a little mistake prone at times. And the way he has just matured, cleaned up his game. I can't say enough good things about him. And You love having him out there right now. I got to think that's a helpful tool for SLU to say, hey, you know, when they're recruiting high school players, to be like, you've watched the World Cup, right? And yeah. You know, I mean, it's always handy to have that player to point now. To.
Well, no, yes. Sorry. You said high school, and I immediately went to St. Dominic. St. Dominic has two players on this team. Dominic,
yeah.
That is insane.
It's absurd. Yeah, for just a small Catholic school in St. Charles and not like an IMG or, you know, equivalent. Well, I mean, it's crazy.
Tying in with recruiting, it's funny because when I was looking at high schools, I was originally going to go to either Dominic or Duchesne, and I picked Duchesne because Dominic was old. Like, it just looked so old when I went in there. And, like, I was like, I don't want to go. Like, it's kind of like the same thing. Like, I don't want to go to this college because it's old. But, no, and I ended up going to a public school anyway. So, what does it matter? This jersey will end up being a Ream jersey. I got to get the setup for it to take it over to Soccer Master. And have them do it. So I'm so excited to see how he's done, and I think this team wins versus Iran. I really do. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so.
Men's basketball. What are we gonna say about Paul Quinn, Peter?
Yeah, I was listening to Earl and Rammer today, and I think they referred to it as going to the driving range and getting your swing fixed. They talked to Travis about, if I may be misquoting them, but they were talking about that kind of game was, you know, in between rounds, tuning up, getting your confidence together, getting your shot mechanics together. And then you come out and you actually play a tough round after that. I think that's what this was. It was a 96-53 win on Wednesday, the 23rd. And it's against an NAIA team. We talked about previously why they played the game. Why it was, you know, if you're going to play a lower division game, why this one in particular made sense. And I think my bold prediction was that we would win by somewhere between, I think it was the 14-point margin of victory for SMU and the 70-point margin of victory for TCU over this team. And Zach, my bold prediction was correct. We won by 43. I know. Yeah.
I'm so proud of you, Peter.
You're looking at a genius.
Yuri had 15 assists in this one. Just an incredible pass to Jimerson for a dunk.
Yeah, he tried a version of that today against Auburn that he didn't quite pull off, but I've really come to love this play. And we talked about how much Jimerson has really, really become a deadly off-ball player. And he knows when to go get it. And this was one where SLU gets the rebound. Jimerson flies down the floor and Yuri with a bouncing, you know, diagonal 3/4 length of the court pass finds Jimerson for an easy two.
Yeah. I mean, not a lot to talk about other than kind of the exciting plays. You had Hughes to Thames. This was, in your words, the best alley-oop of this young season.
I think so.
Yeah it was fun pretty. One. You know, I got to be honest, I kind of saw that at the last minute. What I love about these like little games is kind of getting to visit with people that, you know, I've moved seats quite, you know, here and there just with like, you know, cost and stuff like that, and finding, you know, groups of people that, you know, actually enjoy to get rowdy at games. Right. So it was nice to go and kind of, meet up with people that you hadn't kind of, you don't get to kind of see other than at Billiken games, and actually go kind of hang out in an empty seat near them for, you know, 5-10 minutes. Anything in this one that you can really get worried over?
Yeah. I mean, if I'm really looking for that, SLU lost the turnover battle again against an inferior opponent again, turning it over 13 times and forcing only 10. Most of ours were in the first half, which kind of kept the game a little bit closer than it needed to be, kept the starters out there longer than they needed to be. There's really nothing else in the stats to complain about. And if I'm looking for things to be happy about, I think Perkins kind of was doing more Perk things out there again, looking a little more confident. So I think, you know, there's two sides for you. coming into this game, I didn't really say it anywhere, but secretly I kind of wanted Sincere Parker to really break out in a big game in this way.
Still struggling.
Not just kind of hit that first three. We know he can shoot, but I really wanted him to hit like three or four of those, really get his confidence, his rhythm going. He did hit one, and he did have some big time finishes at the rim. His overall stat line was good. So it's kind of a half success there. In terms of having a true breakout, I don't think it was quite that.
It was close. No, I don't think he's struggling, man. I'm worried. I'm not hitting any sort of panic buttons yet. But man, like, he cannot find a shot. He does fine getting to the rim, but he's losing confidence in his outside shot, and I worry that it's hurting his attack mode to the rim, because we saw it in the Auburn game where he kind of shies away from that contact at the rim.
I get the feeling, like, look, it's still, seven games into the season now, and that's a lot of basketball left to play.
Oh, yeah.
When he finds it, I think he's going to find it in a big way. And that he'll have a lot to offer from there on out. Now, speaking of shots, it sounds like you thought Paul Quinn's shot selection was maybe not premier.
I mean, it was. I don't know if it was the shot selection, but they just shot ugly. They made it, they made it. When they missed ugly. It was spray and pray out there a little bit.
So not shot selection so much as just execution.
Yeah, I just don't, like, they were bad when they missed. They missed really bad. It was,
yeah.
This game was kind of sneaky out of hand. It didn't seem like, you could relax and just chill, but it didn't seem out of hand.
It wasn't like Harris Stowe last year, where we were like, breaking halftime scoring records and things like that. In the first half, and I think we had like 127.
We thought we were going to win the Natty after that one.
Yeah, right. It wasn't that kind of game. So I see what you mean.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
No, I was fine with it all, but it was not. It's nice to have those where you can go to the arena, see all the dudes, run up and down the court, dunk a few basketballs, shoot a few threes, and then go home happy.
Yeah. Or not go home, go to Humphreys. What was the scene there like? The Wednesday before Thanksgiving, no less.
Yeah. So pregame was nice. They kind of have an abbreviated pregame menu. Really cool. I don't know if it's cool. I didn't eat anything, but it's cool that they parse down the menu a little bit so that, you're not waiting for food. They know it's going to be an absolute nightmare. Yeah. To get everybody their food on time. So they bring down to the easiest stuff. Post game, it was cool. It was good. I got to hang out with some, some Billiken fans, some people that listen to the show. It was great to meet young Charles from the message board. So got to hang out with him and his buddy and delete a few beers after the game. It was like I never. It was so surreal being there again.
Yeah.
You, in a way, you kind of fall into that college mode again, and it's kind of scary. It's a little. It's either like you fall into the groove of being like a college dude, or you fall into that groove and you look like that old dude at the bar that's just an asshole. Which is probably the latter, honestly, for me. I'm not even going to lie. So, but it happens,
Well, it's definitely more of a risk for me. I'm turning 40 this season, so.
Yeah, the beard doesn't, I got the baby face going on.
Yeah, you could still pass for a little younger. I cannot.
But no, it was cool. I thought the staff did a really great job there handling the big crowd. I'm assuming it was probably one of their biggest dinner rushes. So far since they've been open. So it's kind of interesting. So they're not using that main door that you're used to walking through. They're using the door over by the parking lot.
Huh. Okay.
So that one is kind of the main door, that one that's kind of on, It's over, you know, the little parking lot, not the behind parking lot, the little parking lot outside. So yeah, I mean, it looks a lot like the same. I think we need to propose to put in a Midtown Madness poster up in that and send them a little gift for Christmas.
Oh, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
If they're looking to fill those walls with some SLU related paraphernalia.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, so they, you know, there's way more TVs. The sports watching is so much better than it was back in the day. But yeah, just a cool vibe, and it's good to have it back. And I know, oh, they still have the One Night at McCool's poster. That's good. Still up there. So yeah, I got actually Travis Ford and company were hanging out post game, eating some wings. And I, you know, they tried to buy me beer. I told them I will not be bought. No, I'm just kidding. I can absolutely be bought.
We're incorruptible in our journalistic integrity on Midtown Madness.
One of us, at least. I didn't stay long. I was, I'm an old man, and I got a little tired. So I bailed around 10:30 or 11.
Right as Penny Pitchers was getting underway.
You know what? They weren't doing it.
So Wednesday night, I know it's a big one. That's a full price Wednesday night. You know? Before Thanksgiving, it's like all the amateurs are out. All the people are back home for the night. Let's take all of their money and not just some of their money.
There are still Humphreys cups. Plastic cups are still in vogue at Humphreys.
Oh, good.
Yep. And when I go back, I will be getting the chicken strips and fries just to see if it's as hangover reducing as I remember. And maybe a Dr. Pepper to go with it, you know, just for old time's sake after a hangover. Let's talk about today's game.
Yes, yesterday, as you're all listening to this.
I wish there was a great alliteration to go with meltdown. There's not. So this is the meltdown in Alabama.
Yeah, I can't. Or
the free throw folly.
Oh, God. I mean, or does something start with A? Or, you know, because Auburn, Alabama, is there anything? Yeah, but look.
Absolutely atrocious free throw attempts in Auburn.
There you go. That's a lot of A's.
Yes, it is.
And, yeah, they don't get a lot of A's for their free throw shooting in this one. It was bad. I mean, I guess we can go right to that. We've got this one divided into the good, the fine, and the ugly. I think free throw shooting is unavoidable is kind of the headline in this game. SLU entered this game averaging 81.3% from the free throw line. To give you an idea of how good that is, that's seventh in the nation heading into this game. The average in all of college basketball is, for years now, it's been right around 70%. So I've always kind of thought of that as the dividing line between, you know, good and bad free throw shooting. If you're above 70, you're fine. Higher you go, obviously, the better you are. You know, for years under Ford with French and Goodwin, we were more in kind of the 60s and really at the wrong end of the 60s.
Here's the bizarre part of the free throws, right?
All right.
Three for three in the first half. Okay. Three for three. Second half. 1 for 11. Auburn, first half, 83.33%, 5 of 6. Second half, 56.25. What is in the water? On that, like in the second half, like what are they putting in the locker room water?
56% from the line is bad. It's not an aberration. It's not devastating. No. If SLU shoots even, you know, if SLU shoots that same amount, right, that would be 5 of 11. They go 55%. That's enough in this game to where we are not having to then foul them in the last minute, right? Like, that's the difference between probably putting this game away by a few points instead of losing it.
If our guards make one more free throw each, if Javonte Perkins makes 1 of 2, if Javon Pickett makes 1 of 2, if Fury Collins makes 1 of 2.
Fred.
If Fred makes 1 of 2.
Yeah.
This is an absolute different game because all four of those shots came with the lead.
Right. Yeah. I mean, just just devastating.
My point was, again, I don't think it was a pressure situation. I don't think they crumbled under any sort of pressure, because it was half of those were early in the half, right? I don't understand. I'm not above accusing Auburn of cheating here, because it just I have no explanation. It's like back in the day when people just used religion because they didn't know. They just were like, the sun god makes it light. I don't have any explanation for this.
The one thing I will say, though, is I think this team is very aware of that knock on them, and that, you know, they did struggle to put games away last season. And we talked about this with the Memphis game, where that was a game that looked like SLU was going to start to comfortably put it away, and then it wasn't so comfortable, and they held on and just did. And it seems like everybody, from the coaches to the players, were all very aware of, oh, no, not again. I do wonder in this game. Now, look, this wasn't a game where we had a big lead. This was a tight game all the way through, you know? You don't get to a spot where you're playing the number 13 team on the road, you know, at their place, and you're leading late. You don't get to a spot where free throws become crucial because you've had a bad game. I mean, obviously we were doing a lot of things right, and we'll get to that, but it's just, I think there might be a mental aspect of this. I think there really might be. And it's not so much that was also causing the ones earlier in the half, but it's maybe also those, plus the fact that, oh my God, we're holding on to a narrow margin against a really good team with a chance to win. And I don't know. I think that there's a lot of a mental aspect that goes into free throw shooting.
Do you think then, you know, the missed free throws early in the half made us a little bit hesitant to drive and try to draw fouls? Because if you watched Javon Pickett, I mean, Javon Pickett's performance in this game was predicated on the idea of getting to the lane, jump stopping, going up, faking, and getting his man in the air. And, you know, he made a great move, an up and under, to score a bucket. But, you know, more of that wasn't done in this one. And I don't know if those early struggles, like I said, the only thing that would have made this even more insane is if Jimmerson went 0-for-2.
Right. Yeah. He just didn't get there.
Like,
I think with Pickett, it's like, this is a team he's really familiar with, coming from Mizzou. And clearly, you know, and they said this, the announcers said this in the broadcast, was this was clearly part of the scout for SLU to get Auburn off of their feet.
Yeah.
We did a lot of that. So no, I don't necessarily have an opinion of, like, did we get away from that because we were scared of the free throw shooting? The one thing I did notice, late in the game, Jury had the ball. We were breaking a press, and he wound up with, like, it wasn't quite a 3-on-1. It was kind of a fake 3-on-1 because they had a couple defenders a little bit out of the way. But he had a situation where he was near the top of the lane and had Okoro alone on the right, on the baseline, Jimmerson alone on the left, kind of in the baseline corner. And he pulled it back out and set up for.
I remember that. And I remember 505.
And that was one where I just went, whoa, whoa, whoa. Mm-hmm. Okoro did not have what I would call a good game here. No. He didn't. He struggled his hands, you know, he struggled to finish. Not a good game. And I wondered if it was Jury sizing that up and going, well, I don't necessarily need Jimmerson to take one at this point in the shot clock. And Okoro has not been finishing or hitting foul shots or whatever, and so he pulls back. So that's more where I question, like, the players are overthinking based on something like finishing and free throw shooting.
And here's where I question that decision. Jimmerson shot 4-9 from 3-point range. Francis Okoro from the field shot 1-5. So I'm just gonna say it. Let Jimmerson bomb away. Let's go down swinging. And I think that's kind of what we had talked about. Like, this team has talked about going down swinging.
We don't necessarily need it at that point in the shot clock, but honestly,
I want it.
Take your first good look.
Yes.
I dance with the girl that brought you. I mean, like do what's working.
By the way, I think Jimerson is a he, him. I kind of, you know, so I just want to clarify before.
I'm using a very old expression.
But
let's get back to more of the good, right? Yes. Let's get more back to more of like how we got to this situation in the first place where we're scrutinizing crunch time at Auburn. And you're going to go over what a few players did that you liked in this one. But I want to like credit our defense was really getting to Auburn in this
so
game.
So good.
You know, they scored in the end. They wind up scoring 65 in at home, and that's solid. Mm-hmm. We had clearly not shut them down, but been frustrating them, taking them out of their game, slowing them down, and really getting them completely stagnant on the offensive end, especially down the stretch. When we built that lead up to 58-53, you thought, like, wow, like Auburn just looks bad. Like they look like they're just done. They're not a good offensive team, is like all these things that are going through my head at the time. So I give our defensive effort a ton of credit today. There were, you know, some other things that I have more of an issue with, but there are a few performances that you seem to be pretty pleased with in this one as well.
Yeah. I thought Javon Pickett had a man's game. He had a man's game. It was 16 points and 5 rebounds, and man, was he just, he was Goodwin incarnate in this one. I felt like, and NBA Goodwin kind of in a way, you know, he had the three going for him on at least one occasion. And I mean, the announcers absolutely gushed over Javon Pickett's game here today. Gibson Jimerson, man, 4 of 9 from 3 for 12 points, 6 boards. The dude is slowly becoming one of our most consistent rebounders, not consistently high, but he's getting 5-6 rebounds a game. Jimerson was outstanding on defense once again. I cannot believe the jump he has made in every aspect of his game. He may end up being an NBA player because Javonte Perkins tore his ACL. He literally could be Kurt Warner. Like Javonte Perkins' injury was maybe the best thing ever for Gibson Jimerson's development.
I think that's, I think he still could have developed like this even without that.
Oh, he could have. It's a rate that we're talking about the rate of improvement that we saw from Mike McCall and Jordair Jett the year that we lost Willie and Kwame.
Yeah,
that's essentially the level of development we're seeing.
Sure. Yeah.
In how quickly too. Terrence Hargrove, man, I think he just keeps getting better and better and is becoming really difficult to leave on the bench in a lot of situations, especially with Sincere Parker struggling, especially with foul trouble, with Okoro or Forrester. Forrester had foul trouble in this one. But his night didn't show on the score sheet, but I thought his defense was really, really, really good for comparatively speaking to what it had been. And I thought that was a really great play to the rim he made to score that bucket. I believe it was in the second half that he scored. And I just thought defensive end and rebounding, he was just fantastic. Two of his biggest knocks that fans and I think Ford has had on him since he's been here.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. Yuri Collins, on the other hand, this was a game where entering this one, we looked at, this is another marquee matchup. And in our preview of this game last week, we talked about how he's got another opportunity here to make a name for himself. He's going up against another small guard like he did against Memphis. But a guy who also, like against Memphis, is a nationally known name, a guy who's this Auburn team kind of revolves around this year. And that's Wendell Green Jr. And this was the big matchup coming into this one, right? Like Auburn's, you know, they lost a few guys to the league last year, to the pros. And now it's Green's team, and he's a small point guard. He kind of does a lot of everything. He could really score. And today, it seems like, unlike against Memphis, Yuri might not have necessarily won the battle of the point guards.
Yeah, it seems like this one's a live to fight another day. Kind of like a stalemate, I think, between the two guards in a lot of ways. 9-4 assist to turnover ratio. I thought he was fine. He made some really great plays. I thought he missed a couple plays. One of the great plays I mentioned when we just spoke with the Iona podcaster that'll be coming out soon. He made that Steve Nash like kind of dribble around in a circle and then be patient and find a guy, right? But then he goes and, you know, he's looking for Jimerson on that home run pass. And I love the idea, but it just wasn't there. And I think, you know, he didn't have a great game, didn't have a bad game, just kind of he had a game and he had it on the road. And I guess I think denoting that it's on the road, you know, would put him, I think it was a fine game out of Jiří. Nothing special, though.
I don't disagree with that on the whole, but the issue I have is in the last few minutes, and we can get into that in more detail, but mm-hmm. in the last few minutes, I didn't love his decision-making in this one. I think he's shown a tendency this season to kind of try and lean on his scoring more in a close game at the end. And I don't know. When he misses, it looks like he's forcing things.
Yeah.
And I think that was true at the end here. I didn't like the three-pointer he took. Another one, he tried to go to the hole and got blocked in traffic by what felt like three different people at once. I don't like when he kind of forces things himself offensively. I think he, you know, if you're getting blocked by that many people, it means you've missed your targets. There's other guys who are open by that point.
Although that was a sick little teardrop he did.
He did have one of those. Yeah, and then in terms of our bigs, I mean, we talked about Okoro's. This was a bad game for him. But Jake Forrester was okay in this one.
Yeah. Yeah, Jake Forrester, he started off really shaky. I think, I did a live stream, and I don't know how many of you even watched, probably zero. But, you know, I think in that early half, I had to check myself because I didn't want to get too crazy on the stream where I just started, like, yelling to get Forrester out of the freaking game. I was like, Jesus, get him out of there. Like, he's just completely over his head, and he eventually started treading water and even started swimming after a while. So
5-4 with 2 blocks in 9 minutes. Gotta love that. 4 fouls in 9 minutes is a problem. We can't afford to have our bigs, even our backup big, get in that kind of foul trouble.
And I thought, again, back to Hargrove, did a terrific job. He played the five. Who came up with that idea? Who? Oh, this guy did. I was excited. Of course, I got really excited to see him in that position, and I thought he did wonderful. I full on was super pleased with Hargrove today.
Run
us down, because you have in the notes what the hell happened there at the end.
This was kind of born out of a text conversation with my friends Joe and Tim and Mike, and Joe kind of went back and watched the 5 minute, big names, all of them. He went back and watched the 5 minutes at the end of this game to kind of see what happened. And, you know, we know that the wheels kind of came off after Okoro's dunk with 4:43 left. That's what put us up 58-53, right? After that is just a carnival of mistakes and missed opportunities and poor decision making. And, you know, the other sort of text conversation I'm having with, like, you and some of our other, you know, to name drop here, some of our other slew buddies like West Pine Bills and Carter Chapley, you guys were saying, hey, this is on the players not hitting free throws, you know, the shot that they're supposed to make, the easiest shot in basketball. You know, I was a little more frustrated with the total picture here because I thought the execution was so bad. So after he makes this dunk, Auburn actually misses on the next two possessions, but on Slew's possessions, Pickett misses a pair of free throws. We get to under 4 and Okoro misses a layup right at the rim with just under 3.5 remaining. And then KD Johnson for Auburn makes his first of 2 layups, which, you know, really fast plays. Collins in this section misses. Thatch gets the offensive rebound, gets fouled. He misses 2 free throws. Johnson makes his second straight layup. And now it's just a 1-point lead. Collins misses again. And then Flanagan has that dunk at the other end in transition. the you know, the whole atmosphere of the place is completely changed by this point. And now Auburn's got the 1-point lead. After this, SLU then misses 5 3-pointers. We don't get back to the free throw line. Not that that was helping us. And that now we're putting Auburn on the line and wasted a little too much time doing that at least once. It just felt, Zach, like a total meltdown. And it's so easy to look at this game and go, hit our free throws and it's a different game. Maybe that's true, but like, how about executing on 2 of these possessions? Because then it's a different game too. You still could have missed the free throws and converted layups, not miss so many 3-pointers, whatever you want to point to in this whole stretch. A lot of things went wrong in the last 4 minutes and 43 seconds of this game, and it wasn't just missed free throws. And that's what has me so bummed about this one, because we still have that big stat hanging over our head that we've never had a road victory against a ranked opponent with Travis Ford as the head coach here. We still don't have that, and this is the best team we've put on the floor in most of our opinions. It's what we thought would be our best team. And if not them, then who, you know, because we're going to lose a lot after this season. A lot of players, not necessarily a lot of games. I'm saying we're going to lose a lot of players. We're not going to be as good next year. We all know that. It kind of felt like this is the season where maybe we grab one of these. And that's what makes this one so tough to swallow, is it wasn't us taking the air out of the ball. It wasn't just the missed free throws. There were a lot of things that went wrong down the stretch here that are really, really frustrating to sit and think about in the wake of this one.
You mentioned something, and I don't remember where you mentioned it. I think maybe in text, but you kind of said that the free throws may have kind of woke the sleeping giant in Auburn.
Yeah. That was a point, you know, again, that came from another one of the text threads with I think my buddy Joe may have made this point initially,
with the guys of the same name, as the creators of Recess. Sorry.
Yeah.
Paul and Joe.
When you're missing free throws, it kind of gives them the idea, like, we could just kind of take it right at these guys, right? You know, I think they sensed a vulnerability is really what it is. I mean, I agree with these guys in that point. I just think, like, it opens things up for them down the stretch in a way that it otherwise wouldn't. If we're making our free throws, Auburn has to play a lot more cautious at both ends, I think is really the point there.
Yeah, just an absolute, I still have no idea what exactly, I can't believe it that actually happened. For the record, there are 3 members of the Billiken Athletics staff: Jordan Collins, Bella Fiorenzo, and Becca Steins. And they are all sports psychological consultants. And I really would like to see all 3 of their offices filled with Billiken men's basketball players tomorrow.
Whatever it takes to not go 1 of 11 from the free throw line in the second half of a game again, go do it.
I mean, Auburn cheated. That's it. I have no other, I have no explanation, man. Like, I don't know why we missed, like, we've not shown anything close to that before.
Yeah, it's mystifying. This is a very good free throw shooting team, or at least it has been through the first 6 games.
I mean, we've talked about in past years where free throw shooting depends on who gets sent to the line. Free throw shooting depends on who gets sent to the line. That's not true here. No. I have nothing. I mean, what else can we say about this game, though? Because, I mean, does this game define the next couple of weeks? I mean, does this game, can this team overcome the collapse going forward? Like, does this hurt them mentally?
I sure hope not. I sure hope it's the opposite. The one that goes, we're so close. We just need to clean some things up and we're there, you know? Yeah. This is the number 13 team on the road in their arena, which is new and which is really nice and which is a really tough place to play. And we went toe to toe with them. And one of my buddies joked, this is back-to-back seasons where we just beat Auburn in a 35-minute basketball game. But in a 40-minute game, we go 0-2. And I just think, like, it's I'm tired of being this close, and I hope that they're feeling the same way, because we've already talked to, well, you know, we're entering a stretch now where we are, after Tennessee State, we're going to play four straight top 100 teams in a row. And I don't know if you've looked at the rest of the A-10 this season. They're not doing very well. These four teams, their ratings would put them anywhere from third to fifth, each one of them, in the league. So it's we're basically playing the equivalent of a bunch of top half A-10 teams over the next 2 weeks here. And that includes Iona on the road. Yeah. You know, it's Carbondale at home. It's Boise State at home. It's Drake at home. These are not easy games. They're not Auburn, though. They're not Maryland. These are teams we, you know, our fans expect us to beat. Yeah. And I think if we roll through this stretch, then, yeah, you look at that Auburn game and go, well, you know what? It's a quad one win. It's on the road. We even beat the spread. You know, c'est la vie. We move on. Hopefully we learn from it. We get better from it. But I really hope that it doesn't, all of a sudden, our free throw shooting is not good. And we're, you know, we're shaky in our execution down the stretch and some of the other things that maybe you're worried about coming from this game.
Yeah, I think Travis Ford deserves a ton of credit for the schedule. I think we've talked about it a lot, but
yeah,
I mean, this is a good, this is an enjoyable schedule if you have season tickets to the Billikens.
Right.
Pete, I want to talk about Javonte Perkins. We have to, because we talked about the incremental improvement from him game to game. Do you think he improved after this game? Do you think this game said Perkins is getting better every day? Or do you think this said, yeah, okay.
He did have one of his makes was something that looked like it was out of, you know, two seasons ago when he was at 100% and playing like one of the best players in the league.
Yes.
But other than that, not really. Again, I thought against Paul Quinn, there were things that were really promising that, you know, it felt like he was kind of his old self getting his confidence back, but no, today did not feel like progress to me. I don't know if you saw it differently.
No, I think I agree. I think it was very much one step forward, one step back. You know, you had, or maybe it was one step back, one step forward, because I think at one point in the game, he, you know, he passed up a shot. I believe it was a three. And I was not happy with that. I thought just chuck it. But I do think there are times where Travis Ford has to get on his ass, because he does. There are times where he asserts himself. Like, yeah, it's obvious to see that he's, yeah, you know, he's looking for his shot now.
And you wonder if he's just afraid to do that, given the injury, you know, bounce back there. Or, you're being a little more.
Or he's just a little, I mean, you know, it's kind of like when you, you know, I don't know, you become a little more timid just because you're not, you weren't the focal point last season. They ran without you, just kind of trying to find your fit again. Right. How you fit into a team with all these really good players and people who can score as well, and trying not to step on any toes in some way. Yeah. And he is, and I don't want to say he's not a killer on the court, because we've seen that he's a killer on the court, but we haven't seen it yet since his return. And I wonder if, you know, he is kind of a silent dude. Like, he just is quiet, and you wonder if that might have, you know, not playing last year could have kind of reverted his basketball, you know, attitude towards his personality and off the court. So I hope not, but let's tie a ribbon on this one and look forward to next week. Yeah, this week coming up, we got Tennessee State on Wednesday the 30th and Carbondale on December 3rd. And I forgot about Tennessee State. I was already looking ahead to Carbondale, and perhaps that's because St. Louis will have a special visitor in town.
I will be in the house for the Carbondale game. It's true. Yeah, get the word out now. But
come see us at Humphreys afterwards.
That's right. That's right. But we, you know, we can't overlook anybody, Zach. No. I mean, that's where you get into trouble. Tennessee State is thought to be one of the better teams in the Ohio Valley this year. Granted, Ohio Valley's down ever since Murray State and Belmont are out, but they're still, I think, second was the official pick where they'll end up. They're 4-2 right now with wins over Fisk, South Carolina State, Alabama A&M, and Cal State Northridge. They've lost to SIUC and High Point. Fisk is actually one of four lower division non-conference games on the schedule this year, which I thought was crazy. I mean, it's one thing to play one NAI team or a D2 team or whatever, but to play four is pretty insane. Their leading scorer is a 6-foot fifth-year guard named Junior Clay. He's actually listed on the official roster like that. Junior Clay. So it's just JR period Clay. Literally, that's what it's.
Oh, my God. No.
His given name is actually Ardaryl Clay Jr., but he just goes by Junior Clay. He's a transfer from Tennessee Tech, where he played his first four seasons. He's averaging 16 and shoots about 7 three-pointers a game. So he'll jack it. And he's
like shoots or makes?
Shoots. Yeah, he'll make, you know, two or three of those. And he's averaged double figures in all five of his college seasons. So he's a guy who can really score. Another player to highlight for SLU fans, Christian Brown, fourth-year player, averaging 13.8 a game. He was actually a really big-time recruit out of a high school, like a solid top 100 four-star recruit. Went to Georgia and never really caught on there. SLU actually offered him. He was out of South Carolina in high school.
That's not to be confused with Christian Braun.
Correct. This is Brown, not Braun. Not to be confused with Chris Brown, who played at SLU.
He actually used to go by Chris Brown.
Yeah.
But he changed it. You know, he didn't want the association.
Right. Yeah. Just a 20-year difference. So he's 6'6", 215. Might be kind of a tricky matchup, but that's about the same size as Pickett. And they probably know each other from the SEC as well. Marcus Fitzgerald Jr. is their third guy. He's a sophomore point guard, averages about 12 and 3.7 assists per game. He's not a very good shooter, but you know, we've heard that one before. Mm-hmm. So just another guy to look out for. They shoot a lot of threes. They don't make a lot of them, as a team. And they're also a really bad free throw shooting team. So can't be afraid to kind of play physical, put them on the line. And, you know, we'll see what we have here. But yeah, Zach.
Sorry, I'm reading the notes ahead of you.
So regardless, you know, even though this is a team that we're definitely supposed to beat, it's going to have a double-digit spread, you know, in Vegas. But can't overlook them for Carbondale.
Clarence Rupert, like, the names on this team are fantastic.
So you're already well into the Carbondale notes, so I might as well catch up with you. Carbondale's also 4-2.
Sorry. Oh, shoot. I am, aren't I? I think people don't understand that I don't listen for, like context. I listen for clues.
Mm.
Like, clues to push forward the story here.
They might understand.
So I'm already into the around the A-10 kind of I'm looking through the notes.
Let me just give you a little overview of SIUC. Carbondale, as we affectionately know them in St. Louis, Southern Illinois, as they're probably known by most. They're also 4-2. They do have a game on the 30th against Evansville in between, you know, when we play them. They have wins over Little Rock, Oklahoma State by one, Tennessee State, and California Baptist, and they've lost to Southern Indiana, which was kind of a surprise, and then UNLV. Marcus Domask is the guy on this team. He's averaging 19. He just scored 32 against Cal Baptist to win in overtime, and then he also contributes 7.2 rebounds per game, 3 assists per game. He's also pretty good size, 6'6", 215. He's efficient scoring it inside and out. He doesn't get into foul trouble. And he's a fourth-year player, you know, along with the next leading scorer, Lance Jones. So their top guys are pretty experienced. They do have two other guys on the roster, Clarence Rupert, a big man, who SLU recruited. And then we also offered a guy named Troy D'Amico out of the Chicago area who really hasn't gotten as high into the rotation as I kind of expected at SIUC. They play a really slow, low-scoring style. They're not a good outside of Domas. They're not a good 3-point shooting team. Again,
I'm sorry, what?
I know we've heard that one before and we've been burned. They are very efficient inside the arc, though. They shoot about 57% inside the perimeter. So if we can kind of force them to shoot more outside, that's hopefully going to work this time. One kind of interesting thing about this roster is that there's a really big overlap between their size and their youth. Their bigs are basically all freshmen and sophomores. So I would hope for a bounce back game out of Okoro. I would hope for a game from Forrester where he doesn't get into foul trouble. I'd really like to see our bigs do well in this one. And then the last little fun fact here, they have a guy on the roster named Foster Wonders, which I I know every preseason there's an NCAA basketball all name team. And I don't think he made the first team this year. I think a lot of people were on Supreme Cook as maybe an All-American on the name team, but Foster Wonders, I think, is an underrated, fantastic name.
It is absolutely perfect. I love it. Let's go around the A-10, Pete. I highlighted a few games in this one, and I'm going to leave them till the end. Okay. Because I don't want to slow down the roll by taking time to jump into them. Monday, 11-21, Buffalo 82, George Mason 74, Duquesne 83, North Florida, the Ospreys of North Florida, the one of the first teams you can pick in College Hoops 2K8. So they are a starter team in 2K8, just to let you know the competition that Duquesne is playing there. 83-82, Fordham 67, Holy Cross 53. Jack Godar will be pissed about that. Syracuse 74, Richmond 71, K-State 77, Rhode Island 57, Georgia 66, St. Joe's 53. Tuesday 11-22, Tulane 78, Rhode Island 75, South Florida 75, St. Joe's 62, UC San Diego 75, GW 70, Fordham 71, Stonehill 60, Richmond 61, Temple 49, St. Bonaventure, 80, Southern Indiana, 66. On Wednesday, the 23rd, Rhode Island, 57, Illinois State, 54. Duquesne, 75, Alabama State, 57. On Friday, 11-25, Harvard beat Loyola, 61-55. Saturday, 11-26, LaSalle, 65, Binghamton, 62, which a lot of people have had trouble saying Binghamton lately. And I don't know why. It's very easy.
Binghamton?
Yes. Who is doing this? Like, who came up with that? That's not right. Binghamton. George Washington, 75. New Hampshire, 54. George Mason, 72. Queens, 65. VCU, 64. Kennesaw State, 61. In a game that looked like an inter-squad scrimmage. Boston College, 53. Rhode Island, 49 on 11-27. And Fordham beat the same Harvard team that beat Loyola 68-60. Looking back on the highlights, or in some cases lowlights, of the A-10 slate this week, Dayton dropped three games. Wisconsin 43, Dayton 42 in what can only be described as the second worst scoring game since Billikens versus George Washington in 2007.
Yeah.
NC State 76, Dayton 64, BYU 79, Dayton 75. In three successive days, Dayton has gone from the darling of the A-10 to, I mean, is their season over? Question mark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And look, the injury bug has been flying around Dayton all season long and preseason and everything. But they did have, you know, their full roster for this event, and managed to lose all three, and man, things are not going well in Flyerland right now.
No, I believe Flyerfest was going around. That meme. Yeah,
that's great. Flyerfest is a reference to the Fire Festival, yes. Which was obviously a disaster. Look, we needed Dayton to be strong this year. We needed SLU to be strong this year. VCU. I'm not going to dance on Dayton's grave quite yet, no, because we do have to play them twice, and maybe they are at full strength and looking great in February and March when we see them. But man, oh man, it looks like a really big disappointment so far. And they don't have the problem, Zach, that is that this event was really going to be their chance to grab some marquee.
It was their 76 Classic.
Yeah, it was their chance to grab some marquee wins, and all they did was go out and come in eighth out of eight. So kind of a really bad visit to the Bahamas for them.
But I will say, while Dayton looks bad, you look prophetic.
Yeah. I mean, how much? I got to go back now and look at our mentions from a couple months ago when people were just shouting
at
me.
We do save receipts.
Yeah, we do. Because like everybody was their responses to me, okay, basically saying that, hey, look, SLU's returning a really strong core, plus we're adding a few fifth year players on top of it. I don't understand why everybody thinks that the exact same roster moving from freshman to sophomore year is going to be that much better. I know sophomore slump might be overplayed, but it is a thing that not every single guy who jumps from freshman to sophomore year makes a leap in terms of his improvement. Yeah. And we're seeing that at Dayton right now. They don't look any better than they did last year. They just don't. Even if they are fully healthy, I just don't think they're really that much better. This is kind of the same team, and they have to accept that.
Yeah, I think part of the sophomore slump is that, you know, it's, hey, the book is out on them, you know. Everyone's got tape now. Everyone has seen Dayton and these guys play, and maybe sophomores aren't quite equipped to make the adjustment they need to in the moment to kind of rewrite that book and beat the house, so to speak. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I do. And I mean, and that's one thing that the league has on them this year, is that everybody knows them.
Yes.
They know their personnel really well. And then the other thing we're seeing with this team is that if they do have an injury or a guy, you know, they had a couple guys leave their last game early. If Malachi Smith has rolled his ankle and has to sit out the rest of a game, things just don't go all that well for them. It's easy for us to point fingers and say that because Uri Collins is 100%. And if he went down, that would be a big problem for us. But look, Smith isn't Collins, whether Dayton fans realize that or not. So I don't know. We'll see how the rest of the season plays out, but I'm not very convinced in this non-conference schedule. Even when they've played bye games, they haven't looked like world beaters. They haven't looked very convincing. So we'll see. Like I said, we still got to beat them twice. That's never an easy game, even when they're down. And this year, when they're supposed to be a peer team of ours, it's certainly not going to be an easy game. So I just hope that they're as vulnerable as they look and that we do sweep them this season.
Yeah. I also highlighted Davidson 89, San Francisco 80 on Friday the 25th. West Pine Bills was high on this one. To me, San Francisco is that team that like we beat to win the 49 championship. Or we won, we tied in NCAA soccer championship, and we share a national championship with them. Like, or maybe that's NYU. I don't know. Who cares? But like, I San Francisco, like West Coast, just doesn't play to me. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thought is they were really good last season, and they're still pretty solid this season. I think people are really looking for that West Coast Conference with Gonzaga there to become more than just Gonzaga as a distant number one, St. Mary's as a solid number two, and then everybody else. I think they're really hoping for like a kind of stronger top to bottom to emerge. And last season in the non-conference, it kind of looked like that was happening. But yeah, I mean, we'll see. I do think Davidson is still a team that we can never overlook. Even with a quote unquote new coach, and having lost some really dangerous players, I think Davidson is still one of the toughest games as far as SLU is concerned in the league. I'm glad that they won this one. I think it's a solid win, but I do think you're right that it's not necessarily like one to hang our hats on as a league.
I would almost rather have a league full of good teams with mediocre coaches than like bad Rhode Island with Archie Miller at the helm, or like, you know, who, what, who else am I thinking of? Help me out. St. Joe's. Wait, who they got? They got, they just, or UMass, sorry, like UMass.
Yeah, you're thinking like of a Frank bad, Martin at UMass.
Yeah, like a bad UMass team with Frank Martin at the helm. They'll end up just beating, like, they'll end up winning some stupid game and ruin everybody's fun. And don't be stupid. I'd rather have, like, an average Duquesne with a terrible Dambrot, or a good Duquesne with a bit terrible Dambrot. Probably the most surprising, well, I won't say surprising because I thought Dayton losing three in a row was pretty freaking surprising. But kind of the one that kind of made me stop and go, huh? St. Bonaventure 63, Notre Dame 51. Not only does St. Bonaventure beat Notre Dame, they beat them by 12.
Yeah, and that defensive performance is definitely eye-opening. You know, Notre Dame is not a bad team. It's not like beating one of the bottom ACC teams this season, like Florida State or Louisville, to talk about a couple surprises there. But Notre Dame entered the game undefeated. And to just hold them to 51 points is kind of shocking. So, yeah, I actually do think that is the surprising result of the week in the league.
Let's talk about our trivia question of the week, Pete.
Yeah, so last week we asked, at 7'1", Bruce Jean would be the tallest player in program history. Only four previous players were officially listed at 7 feet. Who are they? We did get responses that named three of the four, but nobody got all four. Our hint was that they played for three different coaches. So going in reverse order, it's Bryce Hushok, Melvin Robinson, David King, and Rich Neiman. We did get one straggler who got Neiman right in there. And then Hushok and Robinson, a few different people got. Nobody said David King, though. And he's one of those guys who only played at SLU, I think, Zach, for 1 year.
Have you ever noticed that on Billikens.com, there's a bunch of people with screen names that are like, are 1 year players for SLU?
There is a David King. Yeah.
There's a Kevin Foots, or there was a Kevin Foots. There's, who else? Well, there's Brett Jolly Comedy Hour, but
there's a lot of people. I don't know if impersonating is the right word.
I think there's got to be a Grandy's Glaze, right? I think there is. There's a Grandy one out there. I don't know.
I wouldn't be surprised if that is actually Grandy, though.
Yeah.
So nobody gets the official win for this one, but thanks everybody for who did reply. We're gonna be a little more active in coming up with a more consistent structure to these, and I'm still kind of workshopping that. They say the key to a good trivia question is not to have multiple answers, and we're gonna violate that twice in a row. And in this one, we're gonna violate that in a really big way, because
you just quote T.I.?
If I did, it was by
you violating in a major way. Whatever that song is, I don't know.
Maybe I just proved that he's not the lyrical genius we thought he was.
The lyrical genius we didn't know you were.
That's true, and I, you know, I've never even been to prison either. So
you didn't have the time. You don't even have the time to write.
I know. We're going to keep the subject focused on Bruce Zhang. With his signing, China becomes the 15th foreign country represented on SLU's all-time roster. What are the other 14? Now, that
actually
sounds...
Pete, I want to kind of augment this, because I think we have a more parsed out question here.
Okay, go ahead.
What country in the last... We'll put this to from... the time, like, we'll put this since I was born, since 1989, what country has had the most Billikens not named the United States, and who were they?
Okay, so that's a two-part question, one with one answer, but the other with 14 answers. So it sounds like a lot to come up with 14 countries. But when you think about this, the hint I want to drop here is that it really is a very modern era kind of question. You don't need to go very far back. All of these countries except one have produced a player since the year 2000.
By the way, I'm still not over you making me go through 23 years of rosters to find the one country that I could not for the life of me understand where this player was when he played.
I didn't make you do that. You chose to do it. So
you knew that it would be my reaction and you did it to me.
Sometimes I just distract Zach. I got to keep him occupied. But only one of the 14 countries has not produced a player since the year 2000. And so you just kind of start mulling over some recent rosters, and I bet you can get pretty close to it. We'll call the winner whoever gets the most of them. And again, honor code here, but as many of those 14 as you can get, and whoever that is, we will call the winner.
Yeah, I really like this was fun for me because in the notes, Peter put down all the countries, and I just kind of like, it was kind of like me playing Sporkle again. You remember when we all discovered Sporkle? I got to go, actually, we should just create this on Sporkle. I got to go through and try to name everybody. I think I did an okay job, Pete.
Yeah, you did really well.
By the way, there are 14 countries, not 15. Although Austin McBroom is from a completely other planet. So I haven't, we're not including Austin McBroom and whatever planet he's from. Pete,
you look for any reason to bring up Austin McBroom, and I look for any reason not to talk about him.
You know what I don't need a reason to bring up?
What's that, Zach?
Two Men in the Garden and their unbelievable products.
Yeah, I'm happy to discuss this one. And the one I want to talk about today is the hot mango salsa. Somehow, in the term of our partnership with them, I had not gotten around to this one. Had the strawberry, had the peach. The hot mango was the one that had eluded me thus far. And in my last order, I did grab a jar of it. And I got to say, I've never really been a huge fruit salsa guy, but trying theirs, I think they get the balance just right. And especially in the hot mango, I think mango, number one, lends itself better to salsas than a lot of other fruits to begin with. And number two, it's got more spice than either the strawberry or the peach, which is right up my alley. I like it a little bit spicier, and it is more of their hot, whereas the peach and strawberry are a little more mild to medium, I would say. Probably more on the mild side. So if you like a fruit salsa mild, go with one of those. But the hot mango is my favorite. Can't recommend it enough. And you can find it and all of their salsas, pickles, and other products at twomenandagarden.com.
On to women's basketball. And Pete, I don't think we can lie to our listeners here. This is not a much of an exciting. I mean, even in the win, there's not really much to be excited about.
The one retort I would have to that is when we saw this gauntlet of a schedule come forth for women's basketball this season and thought, oh my God, I can't believe Rebecca Tillett's doing this in her first year. We looked at this event. We looked at all the teams in this event, five of them NCAA tournament teams last year. The other two, I think were both right around 20 win teams, and one or both of them played in the NIT. We said, if SLU comes out of this event as the seventh place team, that's probably a success. And they did. They did. So look, I know Air Force and Baylor are very far apart in terms of program quality. Air Force was a pretty good team last season. Even if they're not as good last season, I think that was going to be the litmus test. Whether it was Air Force or whoever else came into that seventh place game against us, that's the one we needed to win here, Zach. And honestly, we could have won the day before as well. You know, we may have, you know, been in the fifth place game instead of the seventh place game.
I wish we could have watched these games.
Yeah, but
it's amazing. It's kind of amazing though. Like, it's kind of a slap in the face in a lot of ways because Rebecca Tillett booked this tournament to get exposure against Baylor.
Yeah.
And there's no exposure. I did see ESPN SportsCenter talked about us, which was cool.
But still not the level of exposure you would want.
No, not at all. Not at all. Right. So, I mean, the fact that we weren't on a normal channel is just kind of shitty.
Yeah.
At least even on ESPN Plus, like some, you know what I mean? Something that everybody has, I guess. Not much to say about this one. Flowers, 13. Nicastro, 12. Kennedy, 11. Unexpected top three in scoring, Pete.
Yeah, really unexpected. Nicastro being a first-year player. Peyton Kennedy, somebody who hasn't been used a whole lot. And then Brooke Flowers, for as many things as she does, she rarely is that top scorer. But they have 13, 12, 11. And meanwhile, the people you do expect to be the top scorers, McMakin and Clegg, go a combined 4 of 25 from the field, 2 of 14 from 3. Zach, I'm guessing whatever was in Baylor's scouting report on SLU was shut these two down, make them shoot difficult shots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's about right. I really want to go back and watch this. Like, I need to go find video on this game because I want to see. I just want to see what happened in this game. Obviously, it's nothing good, but it's certainly a piece of the puzzle to learn a little bit more about this team.
Yeah, and I mean, to go back and watch this, it's probably about the same cost to register for Synergy as it is to get a Flow Sports subscription for a year. So,
The Belmont game, after 78-68 loss, this is one of those tales of, this is a Dr. Jekyll and Miss Hyde game.
Yeah, it's not really even a tale of two halves. It's really three quarters and one quarter.
Yeah.
SLU started this game on a 15-0 run. So they outscore Belmont in the first, third, and fourth quarters. But the problem, Zach, was being outscored 24-4 in the second.
That sounds oddly familiar, Peter.
Losing by 10. Yes, it's unfortunate.
Is that the exact score that was the first quarter in that debacle of the exhibition game?
Yeah, I think
it's close. It's damn close.
It may have been 22-4. Yeah, I'm gonna have to go look at that, but it basically was the same quarter.
Belmont got 26 points from starter Destiny Wells and another 20 from Kylan McGuff off the bench. McGuff, that was another game. Never mind. I'm thinking of another person that torched us off the bench. McMakin at 24.7-21 shooting. I need her to be more efficient, man.
That's kind of the game we've come to expect from her, though.
Yeah, it's the McGuire butt game of Billiken women's basketball.
That's right.
McMakin at 24 points, but the Billikens lost. Flowers 12-9, Martinez 9-8, Clegg 0-8 off the bench, 4-23 from three. For a sport that is so much based in the 3-point game,
yeah,
you cannot have this sort of shooting on a women's basketball team.
It's bad. It never started strong, but now through. And I'm skipping ahead to the next game as well. Through their first nine games, they are shooting 23.7% from three. And it's really these last three games that have just completely cratered it. You know, it was already not great to begin with, but man, oh man, these last three games.
77-58 win, as we mentioned earlier, versus Air Force. Pete, how do you win in a game in which you shoot 2 of 17 from 3-point range?
Yeah, well, you out rebound them 51-33.
I have to mention
that's a good way to do it.
I have to mention the first thing I thought of when I saw the rebounding totals in this game was the height restriction that they used to talk about for Air Force Academy.
Yeah.
And why the men's basketball team never really reaches any, is impossible to win there. And then I remember that women tend to be much shorter.
Yeah, anyway. I mean, as much as the women's game has grown and there are, you know, taller players on rosters now, it's rare that you would actually have one run into that Air Force restriction. Yes.
Not much to say in this one. Oh, actually, there is one thing to really say about this one. Big congratulations goes out to Brooke Flowers. Hits 1,000 career rebounds and 300 career blocks. Pete, put some perspective on these numbers.
I mean, those are the blocks record is already far and away the all-time SLU record. So every single block that she gets now is just another one, putting her record further and further out of reach in SLU history. I don't know when she's said and done, how long that'll stand for. And it's one of those things, Zach, that if somebody comes along and breaks that record anytime soon, I'll be very happy with that.
We're going to make the NCAA tournament.
That's exactly right. The rebound number is also really exciting because Arlene Lampe, who played in the 80s, has the all-time rebounding lead or, you know, record with 1,000 exactly. So Flowers has now tied and surpassed that record as well. So she's got blocks. She's about to put 100 blocks between herself and Arlene Lampe, who's number two. And now she's just going to add more and more distance between herself and Lampe on the rebounding records. So pretty exciting to see Flowers decisively take over a couple all-time records.
Yeah, I really love Brooke Flowers, and I love what she's brought to this program over the last 4 or 5 years. And it really still hurts. It hurts deep to see that, like, A, she's dealing with a coaching change, and B, again, this is a touchy subject. I think it's a little taboo, but she's never put on, you know, additional strength, additional muscle. She's never, you know, and I just wonder how much even better she could be if she was able to out muscle some players down low. And I don't know, I'm not going to sit here and say I know why, because I don't know whether it's on the strength and conditioning end or if it's on the want to end. It doesn't matter. What matters is that I think if she packed on a little bit of muscle, she'd be that much better.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what it is either. I mean, she's 6'5". She's really long.
It's hard to.
She might be one of those people where, you're right. It's just like, yeah. So,
eat all the Uncrustables and whey protein drinks like Forrester did. But
yeah, that's right.
Next up, Billikens head to Mizzou on the 30th. That will certainly be a tough test. They definitely don't have their I believe she graduated, right? Or she transferred. She went in as a grad transfer, I think. I can't think of her name right now. But the Mizzou's a really good player last year. She's from St. Louis, and I thought what might happen was the Billikens were going to get a coach with St. Louis ties, and we're going to bring home Aisha Blackwell. Is Aisha Blackwell?
Oh, that's right. That's
right. Yeah, I thought
not on the roster anymore.
I was expecting, you know, we'd bring home some St. Louis head coach, and they'd bring home Aisha Blackwell. So she's no longer at Mizzou, but Mizzou still puts out good women's basketball teams every year.
Yeah, they're 6-1. Their only loss is to Virginia Tech, which came this past week down in the Bahamas. So yeah, they're good.
Illinois State on December 3rd. So get out and check out that game on the 3rd. Swimming and diving, Phoenix Fall Classic at the University of Chicago, November 18th through the 20th, men came in 2nd and 13th. Women came of 2nd and 13th. I really would need to go back and look at the attendees of this meet. But, hey, 2nd out of 12, 2nd out of 13 can't be too bad. University of Chicago won both men's and women's. Mostly non-D1 schools competing. But 33 top 5 finishes for SLU, 19 for the women, 14 for the men. Next up are the Toyota U.S. Championships, which sounds really important. November 29th through December 3rd in Greensboro, North Carolina. Pete, any last thoughts that we may not have gotten to, or I may have forced our way down through these notes and not let you get a word in edgewise?
No, the only other thing that I want to direct people's attention to is keep following Jordan Goodwin and his progress in the NBA. He had his first career NBA start, which is honestly, Zach, kind of crazy to even consider. This undrafted 6'3", really unusual player out of St. Louis Metro East, started a game for the Washington Wizards, and they're not bad this year. And he's a big reason why. So keep you know, we're not going to check in with his stats or whatever every week, but I do want to keep people on top of that. Like, pay attention to what he's doing. He's doing great. And please, please, please support Tim Ream and the U.S. men's national team on Tuesday. They play Iran. He's going to start again. Fully confident he's going to play well again. So keep your eye on number 13 out there for the red, white, and blue.
Yep, that wraps up the week in Billiken Athletics. Follow us on Twitter at Midtown Mad Pod, at Peter is a Tweeter, at Zach Miller MMP, and on Instagram at Midtown Mad Pod. We appreciate any and all suggestions you might have for this show. Go subscribe on all platforms, and if you haven't left a review, do that as well. 5 stars would be great, but you know, if you leave us a review with some constructive criticism, we'll definitely check it out. As always, Pete, no matter what happens every week, go Bills.
Go Bills.